Welcome back to the Lash Base Podcast. This is episode number 25, and it is a very important episode. What I want to talk to you about today is something that can make or break you as a lash artist, and that is, of course, lash retention. So what I'm going to do in this episode is talk through and remind you and maybe even educate you on a few things that you need to remember when it comes to getting back to lashing after all of this time off. What can make lashes last and what will affect the retention. Right, let's get started. So here we are then, 2 months later than we would have hoped to have released an episode, but it is what it is. So firstly, thank you for bearing with us during the last 2 months. I know this pandemic has been absolutely horrendous for the majority of people, and for that, I'm grateful that if you are listening again now, it's good to have you back. I do also want to apologize in advance if this is a slightly rusty episode. Getting back into podcast recording is very difficult. I've just done that intro that you've just listened to. There were 15 takes, and believe it or not, that was the best one out of the 15. So this is a very important episode I have put together with my team, and a lot of information on lash retention that I'd say it's going to hopefully you'll pick up a few tips that will educate you that you won't have known, but mainly you may find and listen and go, do you know what? I have been taught that before. I'm glad I've been reminded about that, because what's going to happen if you haven't gone back to lashing, because as of recording this episode, there hadn't been any announcement as to when we could go back to lashing. Maybe if you're listening to this in a few weeks since it's been posted, you will have a little bit more clarity on when we can go back to lashing, fingers crossed. But for many of you, there's going to be a lot of high anxiety and a bit of concern about going back after not lashing for so long. And with the rustiness of being unpracticed in lash, being a lash artist again, I know you might not forget, it's like riding a bike and all that. However, you might be a little bit slower, you might be a little bit unsure, and with that might come some issues which can compound if they're not dealt with straight away. So this episode's going to be one of those where I hope that I can explain all of the potential variables and reasons to why lashes will last or they may not last. Right, so I've listed this and I'm going to break down each section as best I can. So I'm going to get started, obviously, with section number one. And section number one is actually very short and simple. It's quite important, and there's a little tip in here as well. Basically, the question that you need to ask yourself whenever you're going back to lashing, and especially now, as you may have been storing an adhesive for a month or 2 months or 3 months, however long it's been, you need to find out how old that adhesive is. Sounds like a simple one, but just make sure you check the date on it. Sometimes there, or most of the time, I believe a lash adhesive will not have a manufactured on date on it. However, it should have a batch number, and you should be able to contact the manufacturer and give them the batch, or the supplier, sorry, the brand, give them the batch number, and they will be able to give you an answer as to when they got that in or when that was manufactured to give you the date on it. And that means, so like if I talk specifically about lash base adhesives, I know a lot of adhesives are similar, give or take a month or so. However, once bottled by the manufacturer, lash adhesive has, if stored correctly, and there's again a lot of variables in the whole if stored correctly debate. However, it has up to a 9 month shelf life if unopened. So a lot of people might have bought their adhesive just before the lockdown at the end of March. And you know what? You'll probably still be fine right now with it. However, it's probably worth testing it on a practice set before you get going, just to know if you do need to buy a new adhesive anyway. So first things first is understand how old your adhesive is. And another thing to do, because once you open that adhesive, if you've one of the lash artists that have been doing the strip lash sets, or even if you've been practicing on anyone in your household or anything like that, then you need to make sure that you've got a new adhesive for when you are back to lashing clients and starting to receive money again. Most of the time, like for example, a lash base adhesive, again, if stored correctly And depending on the amount of times you're opening the bottle, closing the bottle, because that lets the oxygen and the moisture in through the nozzle of the bottle, you can get up to 3 months life out of it, which again is great. However, within the space of about 4 to 6 weeks, that's when the ingredients and their performance can start to degrade, and then you won't get the same results as you had. So my main advice for this section of it really would be, when you get your new bottle of adhesive, when you open it, write the date on it anywhere. We use a Sharpie, or even if you have a document or a folder, make a note of the date that you open it, because then you can keep track. And like I said, we recommend, whether you've opened it or it's unopened, any of that, I would say, just to be safe, make sure you're renewing your adhesive every 6 weeks anyway. So that would be tip number one. Make sure when you get back to lashing, you understand how old it is, or how old the adhesive is that you're using, whether it is unopened or opened. So moving away from the adhesive side of it, because believe it or not, in my opinion anyway, the majority of lash retention issues are actually caused by anything other than the adhesive itself. It's quite funny, when you get somebody that has poor retention, or lashes, anything to do with lashes not lasting, the first thing that most people do is blame the adhesive. It must be the adhesive's fault. And I can't imagine the amount of money that some lash artists have wasted in buying several different adhesives, thinking that's going to be the cure to their retention problems, when the answer, 9 times out of 10, like I said, in my opinion, 9 times out of 10 is actually nothing to do with the adhesive. So because of that, I'm going to move away from talking specifically about the adhesive when it comes to retention issues, and move on now to probably start right at the beginning with the cleansing and the prepping and how you prep lashes, which can affect retention. So firstly, if you are lash artists, you should be doing some form of preparation of the client's natural lashes before you start the lash appointment. It surprises me, and I'm not going to name any names, but I have a family member that goes and has their lashes done, and they say that they don't have any sort of, there's no cleanse, no prime, no prep, like, there is nothing. They just go lie down. Luckily, the person washes, my family member washes their lashes before that they go to the appointment, so that they know that the lashes are clean. But the lash artist doesn't do any form of prep. So firstly, if I just like run through the types of prep or the prep products that you can use, you could use a lash cleanser. Everyone's seen that, the foamer bottles that you wash through and then you rinse off and then you sort of pat dry or dry and get started. You could use a primer, whether that's an alcohol-based one or not. They both do different jobs, so always look at the instructions or ask the brand that you're buying the primer from which job it does. You could use the protein remover pads, which is just the pads with the cleansery stuff on that you wipe through. And like I said, all other kinds of gels and washes and different kinds of prep products that you can use. So my advice for sort of prep wise when you're lashing is, don't overdo it. Don't get me wrong, it is my job to make the products sound good, and every single product that we have for cleansing and for prepping lashes and priming lashes is brilliant. It does the job that it's supposed to do. However, one thing that a lot of lash artists can get caught up in is using everything. So I remember seeing on the Team Lash Base group the other day, on the Facebook group, on the Team Lash Base group, someone said, right, I cleanse the lashes with a foaming cleanser. I then use the primer. I then use the protein remover pads. I then use saline water to remove, wash it off or rinse it off. I then dry it. I then start. But I'm having bad retention. Why is that? And a lot of people did answer and said the same thing. You don't need to use all of those products, like almost pick one and start. There are reasons for these products and they all have their specific uses. So for example, if your client is coming in and they're just bog standard, they haven't been wearing makeup, they don't have makeup on, they don't have overly oily skin and lashes, they're just bog standard, then a simple foaming cleanser wash, bath, whatever you want to call it, will do the job. You could even maybe get away with using just protein remover pads and wiping through them. However, you don't need to necessarily use both of them. So one of the issues that can cause retention issues is almost the using too many products. Now, if you use them all correctly or use them individually, they will actually make your lash retention even better. However, if you use them, like with everything, if you use them incorrectly, or if you use too much of it, or if you don't let it evaporate, or if you don't dry it correctly, then that can have a negative impact on your lash retention. So when it comes to sort of the pre-application products, I just wanted to run through a couple of them and the correct ways or reasons why you should use them. So I think I'll start with the foaming cleansers. So everybody should be cleansing and washing lashes. A foaming cleanser is a great one. Most brands now stock a foaming cleanser. Quite simple. You can pump it straight onto the client's lash line and use a brush and sort of like scrub through. It's really good at cleansing. It almost, with a lash-based purified cleanser anyway, provides a pH neutral or balanced lash, a natural lash, which is perfect for cyanoacrylate adhesives. It means that you get a stronger adhesive bond. However, one of the issues that can cause bad retention when using a foaming cleanser is if you don't dry it correctly. Now, this means that some people might use a cleanser, brush it off with one of your cleansing brushes, and then it appears as if that's it, you've brushed it off. But the problem is you'll still have a residue of the chemicals and the ingredients that are within that cleanser on the natural lashes. So when you then start to lash, you're not going to get the strongest bond. So really, it is key to rinse it out, rinse it off and pat it dry and make sure that it is dry. But on the flip side, again, this is how picky it can be. On the flip side with any of this, if you dry and make a client's lashes too dry and take too much moisture out of the natural lashes, as you probably all know that you're listening to, who's listening to this, cyanoacrylate lash adhesives, they work under the presence of moisture, that's water. So if you're taking all the moisture away from your client's natural lashes, all of a sudden you'll notice and you'll think that the lash glue just isn't drying. So you'll think this is supposed to be a quick adhesive. Why isn't it drying? Maybe, just maybe, one of the many reasons is because you've dried out the natural lashes way too much. And one of the reasons, just moving on from the cleansers now, one of the reasons for this can be the use of primer or any alcohol-based solution that you use pre-application. So when you use a primer, the main reasons for using a primer or an accelerator is for the two reasons. So to prime the lashes or to hopefully speed up the adhesive setting time, depending on your requirements. And it's often recommended that you use a primer when a client has naturally oily lashes, because what this does is it strips the oils from the lashes, creating a better base for you to get a better bond. And if the client does not have oily lashes and you're using this, you can really, really strip away and dehydrate the lash. And it's almost like trying to lash an extension onto a piece of straw, and it just will not stick and you will get poor retention. So you can forget about your timings, your speed, the humidity, the temperature, any of that. If you're incorrectly using the prep products, not rinsing them off too much, they're too wet, they're too dry, you're using too many or using too little, all of those can factor into the retention of the lash extensions. So before you consider it being the adhesive, think about the whole process. So that's section two. I could go on about this. If you do have any questions about prep products, pre-application products, how to use them, why you should or shouldn't use them, which ones are best, which ones are worst, firstly, the answer is always it's personal preference. They all have a place and a use. However, feel free to DM me on Instagram and I would definitely help you out and point you in the right directions. Likewise, ask on the Team Lash Base Facebook group. There's a lot of people in there that are very helpful. So that's number two, and that's the prep and the pre-application side of things. I want to move on to number three, and this one all comes down to how you deal with the client. People that know a lot about lash base and know about our like patch test guidelines and what we recommend, that In fact, let me start that one again. I'm not going to start the recording of this section again. I'm just going to start again. There are some misconceptions and misunderstandings about the lash base patch test guidelines. There, everybody reads or thinks about the headline of lash base adhesives don't require patch tests. Now, that is true. However, there is a step two and there is a step three to our guidelines. I want to clear that up very quickly. So if you use lash base adhesives, yes, it is true. We do not require a patch test. There are multiple reasons as to why a patch test is actually completely inconclusive, all of which we've got in writing on our website. Again, if you want me to send you the link to that, I can do. However, that's not the point of this section. The reason why I wanted to say that is to clear up what section two and section three are of our patch test guidelines. You can only get away with not doing a patch test for a client if you have fully explained and educated them in exactly how lash reactions work, and you have offered them the chance for a patch test. If the client says, I understand how allergies work and how reactions work and the likeliness of it all, and I am willing to not have a patch test, then you're okay to not patch test. What is not okay is if you just tell your client you don't need to patch test, because what can happen then if you say that is if you just tell a client, nope, you don't need a patch test, and then they have a reaction, they're going to be very upset with you because they don't understand why and they'll think you've done something wrong. So our guidelines are that you must explain and educate and communicate with the client beforehand, and you must offer them a patch test. They must decline the patch test for the reasons that you've given, and then you do not need to give a patch test. So that clears up the patch test guidelines. But another confusion or confusing point that comes from that, and this is why it's going to be now step three or section three, sorry, in things that can cause bad retention, believe it or not, is the client consultation. Now, a lot of arguments in the debate of should you or should you not patch test are people that say, well, I do because I like to see the client beforehand to have a consultation. And again, I just like to repeat, lash base recommend having consultations with clients, whether or not there's a patch test involved or not, but you should see your client and you should have a conversation with them, because this will actually affect retention if you do not have a conversation. So basically, when you speak to your client, you need to understand if they're on any types of medication. You need to understand if they're pregnant or they could be experiencing any sort of change in hormones based on plenty of things. And again, do they have any new medical conditions from last time? Ask them about their skincare routine, what kind of products they're using, and then make record of all of this, because it can be so useful. Because believe it or not, hormones and medication affect lash retention. They can even result in lash loss. So if your clients have any of this, it's worth knowing it before you start, because the communication within a consultation with a client means that you'll both have equal expectations as to what's going to happen with lashes. If you don't have that conversation, the client is just going to assume their lashes are going to last forever. And when they don't, because they were on lots of different types of medication at the time, if you'd have just asked that, you would have been able to make sure that the client has the correct expectations in the first place, and therefore any retention issues will be expected or completely understood. So it's a pretty straightforward one, that section, but make sure you always speak to your client, whether that's via messages, whether you get them in person, or whether that's a phone call or anything. You just need to make sure that you have as much information, and even more so that the client is fully educated on everything you're going to be doing. They understand the whole process, and that will make you look more professional. That will increase the risk of people word of mouth referrals, because you know what you're talking about, because you offer such a great and thorough service. And it just makes you seem more professional. And yeah, like I said, point three, that will genuinely save you when it comes to retention issues. Now, I'm going to try and be quite quick with section four because I feel that it's one that most people are aware of. I just want to try and dig a little deeper into it. So basically, the title of it is humidity and temperature. And in short, that is your environmental conditions that you're lashing in. So I think maybe 2 or 3 years ago, it's not obviously a new thing. This has always been a thing. However, 2 or 3 years ago, I don't think it was like widely taught in all beginner lash courses about the effects of humidity and temperature on lash adhesive. However, nowadays, I reckon there are more trainers than not that do actually bring this up and have a section within their training that explains the effects that the difference in humidity and temperature can have on your adhesive and therefore then your lash retention, if you understand that. So basically, when we're talking about humidity in the lash world and lash terms, we're talking about relative humidity. So the amount of humidity, it's moisture present in the air at the time, and temperature, obviously hotter or colder. So when you're lashing, if the humidity, if there's more moisture in the air, when if it's more humid, the relative humidity is higher, then your lash adhesive is going to set quicker. And the opposite happens. If it's lower relative humidity, then your adhesive is likely to set slower. Temperature wise, if it's hotter, then it will set faster. And if it's colder, it will set slower. Mix them both together and it's a nightmare to control, especially because today's world of elite adhesives are so picky and difficult. I know a lot of people are coming out with adhesives saying that they can work in all humidities and temperatures. News for you, all lash adhesives can work in all temperatures and humidities. You just have to work with it and just how you're working. However, so like you might think, I already know that I need to control my humidity. I've got one of those hygrometers. It tells me what it is and that's it. So you know if it's good or if it's bad. So the bit that I actually wanted to talk about when it came to this was the fact that if you know me, I have said this before, if you're buying a hygrometer for £10 or under, it's highly likely that it's going to be inaccurate. As a test, we bought three cheap ones from different places and they all said different humidities and temperatures and they were all just sat next to each other. So that's how inaccurate they can be. And a lot of people sort of like live their lash day based on the number that is on that little screen that they've got from their hygrometer. So if you have one of these, I think they're great for giving you an indication about the current level of humidity and temperature in your lash room. However, please don't run your lash life based on it. So for example, things that can affect the reading on that is if you've got that and you've put it by a window, the temperature and humidity over by your window is going to be completely different to the zone that you're lashing in. So you might think it's your humidity and temperature is fine, but it might be over by the window, but it might not be where you're lashing. Another thing to consider when it comes to the environmental conditions is how much it can change in a single day. So you might be lashing in the morning and have a couple of clients in the morning and think, yep, everything's fine, lashing's going great. And then in the afternoon, you have an absolute nightmare and nothing seems to be sticking or things are drying too fast or any of that. You need to consider that the humidity or temperature has completely changed from 1 hour to the next. So if you get anybody that does have lash retention issues, if you've keeping a diary, which you should, you might build a picture that these lash clients happen to be people that are booked in the afternoon or booked in the morning. So you then can start to understand what point it is that you're having an issue. Because if you're using the same adhesive, and you're lashing at the same speed or you're doing everything exactly the same throughout the day, yet the humidity and temperature is swinging so much, of course there's going to be differences and in your lash retention between clients. So there's so many, and this is one thing that we always say when we're trying to speak to people online over like an Instagram DM or even an email, it's almost impossible for us to diagnose a lash retention issue based on a few messages, because there are thousands of variables at play. And it's if the person that's having the problem that's contacting us knew what the variables were and could pinpoint what's actually happened, then they wouldn't be getting in touch in the first place. So therefore, the person contacting us doesn't have all the variables, so it's almost impossible for us to try and hazard a guess at what the issue could be. So therefore, when it comes to humidity and temperature, I know everyone talks about it a lot, and it's the first thing most people say when it comes to lash retention issues is, oh, my humidity and temperature was perfect. But so that can't be the issue. But the thing is, you just don't know if that's the case all day, every day in the exact area that you're lashing in, because a lot of things can completely change that from, like I said, from hour to hour. So my advice for that one is you should use or get or purchase a hygrometer, but don't live your life by it. Just use it as an indicator. Be aware that it can change as you're going. You'll only learn through experience and practice how your adhesive works. 100% don't chop and change your adhesive. You need to really get to understand the one that you're using. And only after a bit of practice and experience will you realize if you should switch to a different adhesive. So a lot of people will have bad retention. They'll change adhesive immediately. That's not how it should work. You should practice, go through all of the variables. Obviously, I've only mentioned three so far. Go through as many as you can and think about what it could be and make changes and learn and understand and learn how your adhesive works, its consistency, its speed, before then considering to change to a different adhesive. So that's the end of humidity and temperature, because I know everybody listening to this is aware that your humidity and temperature needs to be at a very standard, almost like room temperature level on both counts, and the optimal conditions for the lash adhesive will be stated either on the bottle, on the packaging, or on the website, or you can ask the brand that you're using and they'll be able to tell you. So often it's quite a wide range, so you should hopefully be able to get it under control, but it's just to understand that how much it can change in just one day. Moving on then to number five, and this one has, again, so many different variables within this section, and that is your speed. So I hate to break it to you, if you've not been lashing for the last few months, when you go back, you will be slightly slower, whether that's your application hand, the isolation hand, any of it, the dipping, anything you do is likely to be just that very, very fraction of a second slower than it was. And if you're used to a very fast adhesive and you're going back and you feel like if lashes are pinging off when you're brushing through, it is curing too quickly for you because your speed may be affected. So one thing when you go back, and a very important thing to go back, is to consider your speed and make adjustments so that your adhesive works with your speed. So whether that is making the room slightly colder or whatever it happens to be that can, you know, that can slow down maybe a faster setting adhesive, or if you use a slower setting adhesive and use an accelerator or something that causes or speeds up the adhesive, the bond, that might work out better for you. But one thing to consider when you go back to lashing is your speed. So when selecting adhesive, always pick the one that like suits your speed. There's this real strange misconception lately that I can see how it's happened, but I don't agree with it. And weirdly, that is the faster the adhesive, the better it is, or the faster the adhesive you use, the better you are. The speed of the adhesive that you use is definitely not an indicator of how good you are at lashes. Like, you could use a 3-second adhesive and create amazing sets, or you could use a 1/2-second adhesive and create amazing sets. It really isn't an indication of how good you are. So don't look at all of the great fast adhesives and assume that's where you need to get to. Maybe over time, your speed might increase. Maybe over time your speed won't increase, but your technique will improve. So you'll just stick with the same speed. It's a complete personal preference thing, which is why most brands, including us, have a lash adhesive that meets all of the speeds of a lash artist, from the slow kind all the way up to the ultra fast that you have to be ultra fast with it. No pun intended with our lash base ultra adhesive, by the way. And so the most important thing to think when you're doing your lashing is your speed. So I think, one thing I do want to talk about, which kind of goes along the same lines as what I've just said about the fact that weirdly people think if you use a faster adhesive, that makes you a better lash artist. It's similar. We've seen an increase in issues with customers, and I'd say poor retention because it is, but at the same time, if they're not lashing actual people at the moment, it could just be that they're practicing or anything like that. But people are having or getting confused and not looking at the specification of the adhesive that they are purchasing. So you can see all the clever marketing, you can see everybody raving about certain adhesives and saying how amazing it is and referencing their name. So you think it must be good, so you then go and buy it. The thing is, that's because it's good for them. So what you want to do, like just again, name and no names, and apologies if you're listening to this and you think, hang on, this is me. We had somebody message us today and say, I bought your Ultra adhesive and it was really good, but then I bought your Sensitive adhesive and I really disliked it. It's not very good. I want my money back. Now, that is, and I said this in the office to the girls in the office, they are adhesives at both polar opposite ends of the spectrum. One of them's a 5-second drying time adhesive, the other one's a 1/2-second drying time adhesive. And the consistency, the difference, just to be extreme about it, one's got the consistency of honey, the other one's got the consistency of water. None of them are like better or worse. Or in fact, probably you could argue about Sensitive because it is a more sensitive type cyan acrylate. So maybe not the greatest example, but hopefully you understand what I'm saying. No adhesive is better than the other. It's just whatever is suited to you. So if you can, and I think I've said this several times before, never ever ask the question, what is the best adhesive? Because the answer does not exist. As long as you're buying from a reputable company, as long as their adhesives are regulated and safe, and it doesn't matter that all of their adhesives will be equal. All of them should have like the same retention, and which kind of leads me on to saying, if a company, any companies that advertise their adhesive in strength, as in like retention in weeks, that doesn't make sense. All lash adhesives, professional lash adhesives, if applied correctly, will last the length of time that the natural lash allows until the natural lash sheds from the client's eyelids. So all lash adhesives have that retention capability. You just have to find and use one that works best for you. So please forget, there is no such thing as the best. There is only what's best for you. And once you've found that adhesive that's best for you, it moves us nicely onto point number 6, which is the application itself. Again, as you probably are going, you're duh, obviously, Jamie, application can affect retention. I just want to talk about a few specific things. What you'll find within the lash industry, and as I've now been in the lash industry for 6 or 7 years, I think it is, and obviously my mum's, and I've been with my, I've known my mum for my entire life. That's such a stupid thing to say. Anyway, she's been running the business for over 11 years now, I think it is. And you see it comes around. There are trends, things are popular, things are right, things are wrong. So when it comes down to application, what you can see is, for example, there's a lot of positivity over pre-made fans, which is excellent, especially like the mega volume style pre-made fans. Great. And again, just shout out to our new mega fans that are coming soon. They're awesome. However, when it comes to that, you might then start applying them because they're so easy to use. You're not thinking about how you're applying the lashes correctly. You might then see a trend for these wispy lashes, and therefore you're using longer lengths than you would have ever dreamed of using before. Again, that is why Lash Base is now, we had longer length lashes probably 5 years ago. It was then a trend, or it was then taught that you should never go over a certain length of lash. So we stopped selling them. However, that's sort of the wispy effect and those different types of lashes, it's all come back around again, which is why we now have longer lengths. But if you're applying lashes and products that you've never used before, or you're fairly new to, those can be the things that affect your lash retention because they're not what you're used to. So when you're going back to lashing, if you haven't been lashing that much, or you've only been doing practicing on strips or anything, whatever it happens to be, just be aware that you may be focusing even on your application, but then you need to focus on your isolation as well. Again, I've referenced it in speed. You might just take that little bit longer to apply the lash, all of these things can affect retention. And just again, referencing back to one of my other points, as long as you're communicating with your client and explaining all of this, even if they have bad retention, you're going to set yourself up to be in a better position than if you don't explain anything or everything to your client. It's always good to have a conversation with them about what to expect. And for you personally, when it comes to the application and what you're doing, you need to understand that you may not have done it for a long time. So you may have these issues that are cropping up, but depending on how you apply the product, the lashes, whatever lashes you're using, whatever adhesive you're using, depending on how well you apply it, will affect lash retention as well. So even if everything you're using is absolutely like the highest quality and amazing, if you don't get the combination of isolation and application and the dipping of your adhesive or any of that, if you don't get that all exactly right every single time, and if you're going for full coverage, 120 eyelashes per eye, so 240 times, you're going to have to get it absolutely spot on within that space of time, then you might have bad retention. So I wouldn't feel bad about that, because to try and do something 240 times in a row exactly perfectly when you haven't been doing it for a while is very unlikely. So don't be hard on yourself, especially when it comes to the application side of things, but just understand that your application methods may affect retention. So moving on to point number 7, and here's one that you might think is nothing to do with you, and that is the client aftercare. So you might get experience this in the past, but you might have had messages from a client to say that their lashes haven't lasted. And they're blaming you and it's all your fault. What you might do, or what most tend to do, is consider where they can point the finger. So whether it's not them, it's the product, or it is the client. I hate to say this, but if a client has bad retention, then it is the lash artist's fault. And I mean that in terms of the client aftercare, because we're in the people business. You need to communicate and educate your client on the importance of lash aftercare. So if you can build a relationship and you can have a conversation and manage to educate and get through to your client the importance of looking after their lashes, washing their lashes daily, brushing them, being gentle, don't rub them, they're like all of that side of things, that is your job to make sure that they understand that. If they then go away and don't listen, obviously saying that, I'm going to reverse a little bit, you will always get one or two that literally just, they don't. Whatever you say, like, you'll know it. They say they don't wear makeup, even though you've repeatedly told them don't wear makeup. They'll come in, they'll lie down, you'll look, and you'll see all of the big black mascara chunks where they swear they haven't, but you know they have. So, okay, maybe it's not all your fault. However, educating the client and explaining to them that if they are to wear those types of makeup, if they're not, if they don't wash their lashes, if they rub and pull and pick, if they know that you've told them that that's going to affect the retention and affect how long their lashes last, if their lashes then don't last after you've told them that, they're less likely to be annoyed at you because they'll know that you've told them not to do what they've already done. So client aftercare technically is the lash artist's problem. However, I understand that you cannot get through to everybody, but it is your job to try and explain to the client the importance of it. So all of this is why, again, I've referenced it before, but this is why you need to have consultations. This is why you need to build relationships with your clients. This is why during the lash appointment, it's worth just talking through these things so that you've definitely said it. They definitely have heard you say it. So client aftercare is a huge one for affecting lash retention. And don't get me wrong, you might get a client that calls you and says their lashes haven't lasted. If you can try and be polite, friendly, and professional and get to the bottom of what the client has done for the for there to be poor lash retention, you might get a better answer out of them. The reason being is because if a client calls you and says, I've all my lashes have gone, they've fallen out, your first thought it would be, what have you done wrong? What products have you used that could have caused this? Whereas if you've got a relationship with the client and you can sort of professionally make them understand that you're trying to work with them, that you want to get to the bottom of this. This isn't like, you don't want this as a business person, of course. Why on earth would you do a job for someone that's not a very good job because that could affect your business. That would have a negative impact on you. So of course, your job is to give them the best that you can do. And if you can make them understand that and make them understand that you're trying to work with them to get to the bottom of whatever's happened, then they're going to be more open and you'll be able to ask them the right questions. Like, have they followed the aftercare? Have they, I don't know, have they worn mascara or any eyeliners, or like, well, they clean them daily. All of these types of things you can ask the client, but only if you have that relationship and you can get on their side. So yeah, number seven is client aftercare. And so I want to move on to number eight, which is going to be the last section before I move on to sort of like the final things to consider. But the last section is going to be a fairly new one, or is a new one for all of us. And that is PPE. So as we go back again, like I said, when I'm recording this right now, we haven't had an announcement to say when lash artists can go back to work. Hopefully that changes. But there is going to be an aspect of PPE. So people, whether that's through their own fears and security and feel safe if they're wearing masks, or if we have to, I don't know what the guidelines are at the time that you're listening to this, whether we've got visors on, just all sorts. Whether you are having to put some sort of shield in front of you as you're doing it, all of this is going to affect the quality of your work. So whether that's going to be how well you can see, how well you can do your job, so that will affect your speed, your application, all of those things. Or whether the client, and this is one that from being friends with people in America, I've already seen and experienced this. You might have seen a bit more about this on social media. When a client is wearing a mask, if the mask is not fitted correctly, when they breathe, their breath comes up through where the mask is leaving gaps. And most of the time, that's either side of the nose. So when someone breathes, I know this is going to sound a little bit gross, but they're breathing hot, moist air, aren't they? They're moisture. So they're forcing moisture up directly onto the area in which you're lashing. So that has seriously impacted people's retention over in America and other places that are still lashing. So if your client is wearing a mask, you need to make sure, like I've seen a few people have used little tricks, like we've posted one recently, actually a little hack to make it fit a little better. That's worth doing. They've also used micropore tape to sort of tape down those gaps so that it forces the breath downwards. Because if you've got a client, when they're breathing and it's coming up into where you're lashing, it's going to make the adhesive set too fast. You're not going to get the best bond, and the lashes are going to shed and fall out very, very quickly. So that is a huge one. When you go back to lashing, if your client's wearing a mask, be very, very careful. Oh, and while we're on the subject of these extra PPE things, here's another one for you to think about. With a lot of clients, no doubt when they come in and when just before you start, you may use a alcohol-based gel hand sanitizer, and you'll put that all over your hands. Obviously, the client will put that on their hands. It's not too much of an issue. However, if you, again, I don't know what the guidelines are going to be when you're listening to this. However, one, if you're wearing gloves, that can seriously affect you for lashing and the quality of your lashing. So that's a big thing. However, if you don't wear gloves and you use hand sanitizer and you've put the alcohol-based gel all over your hands and you've washed it, if you're then somebody that uses like the pinching technique or any other technique that involves your hands getting close to the actual lash product, that is almost like you've put a lash primer all over your hands. So then if you're then touching the lashes or however you are lashing, that can impact the quality and speed of setting of your adhesive, which will then affect the retention and the bond. So this new area of wearing PPE and trying to be even cleaner and safer is something you need to consider, because it is going to affect your speed. It's going to affect application. It's an extra thing to consider when it comes to clients wearing it and you having to protect yourself and the distance and the movement and just everything. That all of that is going to probably be, when you first go back to lashing, is going to be your biggest issue, and that is managing the new normal for how you've got to lash. So piece of advice would probably be, get all the bits that you think you're going to need and you're going to use, face visors, masks, and practice, put it all on. Lean over an imaginary person and practice the lashing and just see how you get on. Because I've seen when people first go back to it, you don't definitely, I'm telling you, you really don't want to do nothing, get your first client in, and then that's the first time that you ever have to wear a mask and a visor for a prolonged period of time. It will be horrible for you. You'll be hot, you'll be uncomfortable, and it will affect your lashes. So it's all about getting used to it and practicing. So yeah, that would definitely be a major concern. And point eight of this, section eight of this, and that is PPE. So that brings me to the end of my eight sections on lash retention when you're getting back to lashing. Hopefully you're still listening, because like I said right at the beginning of this, I feel so rusty recording and talking into this microphone. I haven't done a podcast in over 2 months now, and I can really feel the difference. I hope, much like with everything, after a bit of practice and a bit of time, I will slowly get into making these a little bit more like smoother. If you're still listening and you did enjoy that, and you did learn something or you did take something, please, can you do me a favor? I know I ask this a lot, but please take a screenshot, take a picture of what you're doing, anything, just share it up on Instagram stories and tag me and let me know that you're listening. Like I said, and I have said in previous episodes, we can see how many people are listening, but it's quite interesting to know that people have made it this far in, and that's why they've shared that they're listening to a lash-based podcast. So it's pretty cool. And don't get me wrong, I'd just love to see it as well, that people are actually listening and enjoying what they're listening to. So before I do end it, I did want to go over a few sort of like the final things to consider. You know, those really sort of like really tiny, tiny variables that make massive difference. And this is just for those that, everything I've said, you've covered all of that, and they're just those real random ones that you think, do you know what, I didn't know that, or wow, I'll keep an eye out for that. It's worth knowing whether it's likely or unlikely to be something that affects you. This is just sort of like a small taster on the sheer number of variables that there are that cause lash retention. And before I just quickly rattle off these things, I do have to say that just next time you contact a lash brand, whether that be lash base or not, because hopefully people that are listening to this are just from all over the lash industry rather than just like lash base customers, when you contact a lash brand again, just understand that that person at the end of the message, at the end of the phone, at the end of the email, whatever it happens to be, it is so hard for them to have the answers. They know as well as you, like, they know as much as you potentially know in what can affect it, but they weren't there. They weren't there to see what was going on, all the different environmental conditions, how quick you were, your application, the client's aftercare, how the client, just everything. It's almost impossible. You just, for a lash brand to diagnose an issue. So try and work with the lash brand as much as any lash brands listening. Try and work with the lash artist, get to the bottom of it and figure it out. One thing I would say is that I still to this day, if you're buying from a reputable company, I don't think it's ever as easy as, oh, it's a faulty batch. I really, really do not believe that. I believe that because of the probably 1,000 variables that come into play at any one time, there is another reason for an adhesive not behaving properly or retention not being as good as you expected it to, rather than the very simple and obvious explanation of, oh, it's obviously a faulty adhesive. Although that would be great if that was the answer. If the answer is, oh, it must be a faulty adhesive, get a new one sent out and you're completely fine, I wish it was that easy. Unfortunately, it's not. So whenever we get a question that's something similar to that, we have to do our best to try and educate the customer, the lash artist as well, because if everybody understood and knew everything that I've just gone through and explained, then hopefully we can start to educate everybody else. We can start to understand adhesives a little more and what potentially needs changing with adhesives. Who knows? So yeah, I'm going to rattle through a couple of these really strange extra ones just as a little extra at the end of this episode. So understand what you're placing your adhesive on. Are you using a glue ring, jade stone, micropore tape, glass stone, any of that? That, whatever you're putting your lashes on, your lash adhesive on, will affect how the lash adhesive works. So likewise, there are some again, not naming names, just a brand of adhesive that you really have to put it on a specific thing, otherwise it affects it. So it's like, has to be on a foil something, it can't be on glass, it can't be on this, it can't be on that. But the reason why really is because anything that you put your lash adhesive on does impact how the adhesive behaves. Likewise, that's why LashBase sell something called adhesive preserving stickers, because it's a completely non-reactive surface. You put it on there and it'll just sit there, and the adhesive even lasts longer. Whereas if you're putting it on things like a poorly made jade stone or a glass little stone thing, then they can have like maybe even be slightly alkaline. And if they are, then that will impact that will make the adhesive dry even quicker. So I don't know if you've ever had that before, where you seem to think that your adhesive blob doesn't last. It seems to go off quicker than it ever has before, and you wonder why. It's more than likely not to do with what you're putting your adhesive on. Or just to go a little bit deeper with that, if you're using some sort of accelerator on the lashes themselves, if you've swiped some lash accelerator across, or perfect fan, for example, across the base of the lash strip, you're then technically dipping that back into that adhesive dot before you then apply them, which is like adding a primer accelerator to the adhesive dot, which is why also another reason why the adhesive dot will go off a little quicker. So there's so many different variables that you need to consider when you're using that. It comes down to, I think I've said this one before actually, if you're using a tape, some people, if you're buying poor quality tape, it might have trace amounts of like cotton fibers in. And if it's, and again, you probably already know this, if there's cotton involved, then cotton and cyanoacrylate create an exothermic reaction that causes havoc with your adhesive. Go even further on that. If you've got a tape and you've got tape on your jade stone, the technical way that you have to put tape onto a jade stone, at some point you will have had to run your thumb or your finger across that tape to make sure it's stuck onto the jade stone. And two things, if you've got naturally oily skin, you may have transferred oil onto the tape, which will affect the adhesive. Or if you've just sanitized with alcohol gel, you might have then just rubbed a bit of that onto the tape. And again, therefore, that will just make it set and go off a lot quicker. Another thing, sorry, that's probably unlikely depending on what type of lash light you're using. But if you've got your lash light on and you've got it too close to the adhesive source and it's producing heat, your hygrometer in the corner of the room might say that the room temperature is perfect. However, if that, it's like putting it under a mini grill by having it right by your light. So make sure you understand and know where you're putting your adhesive, what you're putting your adhesive on, and the environment around that adhesive blob itself. So something I haven't actually touched on, and the last point that I want to, just the last random point that doesn't fit into those points, the sections that I've already spoken through, and that is the adhesives, the liquid inside the bottle, the adhesive's temperature itself. So it's all right saying that your room is a nice temperature, but if the adhesive, like the liquid inside of that, is not at the right temperature, then your adhesive isn't going to work right. So you may have noticed it before, if you feel like your adhesive's gone gloopy, yet it's brand new. More often than not, that's because your adhesive is not at the right temperature. Simply putting it on the side for a couple of hours in a room temperature, like 20 degree room, will make it fine. It'll be fine. But if it's too cold or if it's too hot, you'll notice it'll come out gloopy and you'll think it's gone off. However, let it get to room temperature and you'll be surprised that it's completely normal again. And that's exactly the same when it comes to shaking your adhesive. You've got to, with these adhesives nowadays, with the ingredients and how professional they are, how thin they are, you have to give it a good shake. So whether that's using like a handheld shaker or just like the lash base shaker, or you're doing it by hand, it has to have a really good shake to make sure that you're getting the most out of your lash adhesive. So I think for the first episode back after 2 months away due to coronavirus, I think I'm going to call it a day there. I hope that you've taken some value from that. If you have, like I've already said, please can you share this on Instagram, tag me at @lashbase_Jamie, and if you want, tag Lashbase as well, please. We will share them at @lashbase_UK. If you have any ideas or any recommendations for episodes, DM me, let me know. anything, I'm looking forward to getting back and trying to get these out weekly again. And I want to make sure everything that I'm talking about is of value to the people listening, because there are a lot of Lash podcasts out there. A lot of them are like the interview styles and they're all very interesting, but I wanted this podcast to be like the free educational, something where you can listen, you can learn, and obviously I hope you enjoy it. Obviously I can't stand my own voice, but the listener numbers seem to say that some people do enjoy it. So yeah, please let me know, message me, and I think I'm going to call it a day there. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you liked it. I'm happy to be back. I promise you I'll get a little bit smoother, but I'm going to say goodbye for now, and I'll see you next week.